Concerning Him. An Emmaus podcast is a ministry of Emmaus Bible College. Concerning Him seeks to enrich Christians around the globe by educating and equipping them through various media. For more information about Emmaus, please visit emmaus.edu.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Concerning Him podcast. Today we are joined by Chris Rush. Welcome, Chris.
Great. Glad to be here. Thanks.
Chris, what's your official title here? I would just say English faculty, but...
Yeah, it's always... That's a good question. Right now, I think it is, depending on how you talk to, Program Director for General Studies, as well as Professor of Literature and Writing in the English Department, or the English Department, I guess you could say, yeah.
Okay. And how long have you been at Emmaus now?
So, teaching? Yeah, this is the start of my sixth year here. Couple of them are a little fuzzy, of course, for everybody in the last couple of years. But yeah, I think this is year six, start of year six. Yeah.
All right. Well, and just getting started here, if you could kind of just walk us through, you know, when I was a student, you weren't teaching yet, I believe, or maybe you started right towards the end of my time here. But what kind of, how the Lord led you in life to find yourself now here teaching at Emmaus Bible College?
Yeah, my story is fairly distinct from a lot of them, and sort of similar for many, right? My dad has been working here for 40 years, so I grew up around here, certainly in the Dubuque area, and around Emmaus for sure. The general sort of faculty functions and picnics and church things like that. When before Arbor Oaks had its own building, we were on campus here at Emmaus for several years. So I grew up around here and with my dad, you know, working here. So fairly familiar with a number of the faculty, like Emmaus graduates or Emmaus students were my youth group leaders and, Sunday school teachers most of my maturing years. So fairly Emmaus-centric sort of experience for a while. So went here and as a student full-time for a couple of years and then before we had the high school teacher education department aspect of that program. So I wanted to be a English teacher. So I went to Clark and was sort of worked out with Mrs. Rasmussen at the time. Well, your mom, actually, you know her. And she was the registrar at the time, and we sort of worked out this this plan so I could go to Clark full-time and Emmaus full-time and get a few degrees at the same time because each campus had different degrees that I was pursuing. And so we kind of partnered with them. And so I was sort of on campus for a while and then at home and around for the end of my Emmaus experience. Then in that time, of course, met my wife, Amy, who's a graduate also of Emmaus, and we got married sort of at the tail end of my squeezing 4 years into five, going full-time at Emmaus and Clark. And then, so we moved away, to Virginia for about 15 years, primarily to be closer to her family. That's where her family was, and her mom was, battling cancer at the time, so we wanted to be closer to her and to her side of the family for a while. And so we stayed there working at Christian schools, one main Christian school, Summit Christian Academy, for 15 years. And technically, I'm still working for them, teaching their senior thesis class online because of the dual enrollment nature of that course. So I had been, even as a high school teacher, teaching college level courses for a while. And, the teaching at Emmaus was certainly always a kind of a dream in a sense, not really one that I, had actively. Certainly would, if the opportunity arose, it'd be, certainly great to come back to, my family and Emmaus where I'd grown up and things like that. So, but we didn't want to force it or anything like that because we had been building a pretty, we'd been both active in helping develop this Christian school in Virginia. When they hired me, there was effectively no English department. So I was able to, do what most English majors dream about, actually not just get a job, but also to basically design the English curriculum myself with some guidance of general ACSI and other classical sort of standards and syllabi and scope and sequence, things like that. And we were able to just, all right, here's what do you guys want to, what do you want to do in English? And I said, all right, here's what we should do. And we sort of had the freedom there to design it and build it over, you know, a period of 15 years. But then the opportunity arose when I was in chaperoning the seniors in Europe. My wife was over here teaching a sort of J term or winter sort of 2 week course for the teacher department. She had done that for a couple of years. And while that was happening, Mr. Jimmo and Dr. Beatty came to her while she was here saying, would you be interested in interviewing for a potential job, you know, joining the teacher department full time? And so she said, sure. And I was in, you know, Germany at the time. And so while that happened, she got offered the job. And so I got a call, you know, on the other side of the planet saying, hey, what did you think about this? And by the way, the English teacher is also leaving. So there might be a role for both of us here. And that seemed like a good sort of sign in a sense that now, since there's full-time employment opportunities for both of us here, plus at the same time, Tri-State Christian School was moving from Galena to Dubuque. And it seemed like a lot of these factors were coming together. And it seemed like now is the time to come back and, you know, be involved in, you know, work at Emmaus. You know, we working with my dad, certainly enjoyable to, you know, be around him, you know, full-time, you know, where my family is and close to everybody here. And so, so we had, yeah, had that. So we did sort of long distance interviews with Dr. Beatty and, Mr. Boom and all that. And so they just, it worked out and came together. And so we've been here for 5 or 6 years. And and then of course, you know, shortly after we got here, it was, you know, God had other plans, of course, for my wife to help take Tri-State in new directions as they developed here as well. So it was fairly clear, you know, so I not the typical Emmaus experience, but like so many faculty, a graduate of Emmaus and enjoy it and know how special the place is and how much God works and cares about it, that seems it was like a great opportunity to come back and do it. Yeah.
Well, we're glad to have you here. You know, my side job for Emmaus is the assistant soccer coach. And both last year and this year, a comment from a lot of the freshmen is, oh yeah, I've got that Mr. Rush for English comp. And I didn't think he'd be funny, but he's so funny.
Yeah, and that's been kind of one of my professional goals, is to make my classes worthwhile and enjoyable at the same time. Like, you're going to learn, but there's no reason it can't be painful and enjoyable. We can sort of enjoy, take a look at the lighter side. You know, one of my favorite authors of the last, you know, couple of decades was Father James Shaw, who passed away about 2018 or so, maybe 2019, 2020, somewhere around there. And one of his most famous books is called On the Unseriousness of Human Affairs, saying that we as human beings often take ourselves too seriously. We do important things, and he certainly knows as a Jesuit Catholic priest, he knows that, you know, we're designed by God. We have you know, spiritual components to us, and there's certainly an importance to us in reality, but you know, humans don't have to exist. You know, we exist because God loves and God created us. And, you know, we can certainly understand that we are part of, you know, his plan for sure, but we need to not necessarily take everything we do so seriously. It's important, but we can still enjoy what we're doing at the same time, which certainly drives in sort of my fascination with, you know, pop culture and thinking the things that are fun and other aspects of society that may not always be considered, this is what, you know, polite high culture should be really about. It's like, well, you know, if lots of people care about it and engage in these things, maybe they're important and we can understand them and talk about them and enjoy them in, you know, sort of redeeming ways as well.
And so that's a great transition there, as we're talking today about Christians and engagement with pop culture, of should Christians engage with pop culture? How do Christians engage with pop culture? I mean, I think there's a lot of people, I think of especially parents, of thinking with my kids, movies and video games and music and all of these things, and how much should there be engagement? Should there be engagement at all? Is it totally pulling ourselves away? But as we get into that, I know you know the history kind of on this pretty somewhat well. And if I recall correctly, before the 1900s, Christians had a huge, at least in the West, Christians had a huge involvement in popular art. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you see a shift, really this sort of dichotomy between high culture and pop culture is a fairly recent mm-hmm. sort of invention, really, late 19th century, early 20th century. And it's kind of becomes kind of a weapon to, you know, separate social classes, especially with music and orchestral music and things like that, which had always been a common sort of local pop culture thing, especially the European tradition of just listening in salons, hanging out and listening to people play piano and sing arias, and certainly going to full operas for centuries, you know, but it was always a sort of communal social activity. And then eventually, you know, by the time you get to the turn of the century, it has this sort of seamy underside of, you know, using pop culture and things to separate, like I said, classes and aspects of society that's, you know, not really with us as much today, it seems like. I mean, there certainly are elements to it, especially in the music realm of, you know, who listens to what, for sure. That's still a component today, for sure. But, yeah, pop culture had, you know, history has an interesting habit of turning pop culture into high art. If you wait long enough, right, you know, Shakespeare is writing these plays to entertain the people, to make money so he can be a poet, right? He wants to be a poet, so he writes these plays, you know, sometimes rather quickly and, you know, not necessarily as edited as you might want professionally, but they're very popular. He makes lots of money. He has become sort of wealthy and famous in his lifetime. And then, you know, they're sort of forgotten until a few years later when his buddies compile them, and then they become published, and now they are literature. And then a few hundred years later, then they become classroom subject, you know. But no great author, 18th, 19th centuries, wrote stories and poems thinking, I hope this will be in a textbook someday. You know, I'm doing this because I want to entertain people, because I have this desire to engage in language and society and emotion and intellect, and I want to reach the people. And yeah, even things like subgenres that have gone through all sorts of you know, ups and downs in society, like science fiction and fantasy, start off by being written by the well-respected authors of the day, Melville, Hawthorne, you know, Edgar Allan Poe. Well, you might be, you know, kind of a dodgy example of well-respected author, but, you know, at the time, for sure. But you get, you know, Jules Verne, H.G. Wells. These are people that are recognized in society, that are welcome in sort of government circles and sort of the movers and shakers of the Western world, in England and the United States especially, and France, for like Jules Verne and others. George Bernard Shaw in Ireland. These are well-respected people that everybody just about knows in society, no matter what sort of social class it's you were in, and they're writing what we call today speculative fiction, because it's just, you know, an acceptable form of creativity and imagination and engaging in what the world might be like. And so for a long time, you know, these sort of areas of life become, this is what society consumes and it's appropriate, and you don't have to, you know, get together and sort of secret and say, yes, oh, I like these short stories by Herman Melville. Oh, so do I, but don't let anybody know. You know, this is a popular culture, and it's acceptable culture at the time. It's not really until that, again, the turn of the century, where you got, especially with the publishing industry, you know, once money gets involved, then all things also always change, you know. And so then just the nature of the publishing industry, whereas, you know, the mysteries, the Westerns, the romance and the horror and sci-fi become published on cheap pulp paper, right? And so they become pulp magazines, and they're printed cheaper, and so they cost less, therefore they're not as important, right? And so they're easy to access, and so it's what the people out there are enjoying, and so they're not what, you know, good kids or, you know, adults should be reading anymore, you know. And then we lose that sort of connection between just intellect and creativity and imagination being something that drives us as people and play and, you know, games and sport and things like that, they become just sort of, it becomes this sort of, like I said, the divide between acceptable things that it's okay to talk about and enjoy and things like that versus what kids and other sorts of, you know, aspects of society care about. So it's not what we should be about. And so, and then eventually it becomes the sort of moral component as well, you know. But that's, I mean, there certainly are valid reasons. And that's sort of the interesting thing is for us as Christians looking at pop culture, there certainly are valid moral reasons why we should not engage in, you know, some obvious aspects of it, you know. For some areas of like movies, slasher movies and things like that, that are really designed to appeal to our base instincts that have nothing really like theming wise or character wise, plot wise, you know, they're not really, it's hard to find good sort of redemptive reasons for why you want to watch this. And, I can learn great life lessons about, you know, conquering the supernatural through, you know, sheer luck and violence. And then suddenly, you know, and so that's an odd thing as you know, we come once again, you know, even the horror industry starts off as a very sort of, you know, almost not majestic, but a very interesting sort of visual sort of storytelling in some of those classic silent horror films of the, you know, teens and 20s of a century ago. And now we seem to be sort of coming full circle to that again, like making horror movies the sort of art set piece of high quality cinema and good storytelling, but also scary and things like that. And like that, in those areas of pop culture, that can be very sort of, I'll say seductive, but very like, oh, this is a, but I hear it's a good movie. Like it might be, but really as a Christian, like why would I see that? And a lot of Christians, I know a lot of Christians that enjoy horror movies and scary movies and things like that. And like, I'm not one of them. So I'm not really an expert in that field, but it's just as an example of why I understand why some Christians, especially not say fear pop culture, but think, like what good is it at all? Mm-hmm. And then sort of those extreme examples often become the go-to, you know, things like that. So, you know, back in the day it was, you know, role-playing games and Dungeons and Dragons, right? In the 70s and 80s. There are certainly a couple of notable examples of young kids who really do bad things or get involved in the dark and scary side of it, you know. And so that becomes sort of the main message that Christians should not engage in role-playing games or, I mean, there's really only one for a while, like Dungeons and Dragons, right? And so, but the field is, I don't say evolved, the field has developed so well in role-playing games today that you can, it can be a great field for storytelling, you know, cooperative, collaborative storytelling. It may have nothing to do with the supernatural. There's all sorts of settings and things, just ways you and your buddies can get together and be imaginative, tell stories, play games, and have fun that don't have necessarily anything to do with the supernatural or the demonic or anything like that. But because it had, you know, because its origins are so, you know, off-putting or scary or unusual, you know, there's still, you know, I think it's certainly diminished quite a bit over the, you know, in the last three, four decades for sure. But there's still that remnant of, what, can it be any good at all? You know, there's more to it. And certainly other aspects of pop culture, I think, may suffer that as well for Christians, even today, you know, the world of sports certainly, we don't think of that as pop culture, but it is, right? Mm-hmm. We even though we have noble aspects of it, like, you know, athletics and basketball and football and soccer and track and hockey and intramurals and things like that, it's well organized and things like that. But like, what about, you know, professional wrestling and other sorts of things that are clearly quite popular? You know, more people watch professional wrestling in a given year, even today, then certainly go to symphonies and operas and things like that. But what is it about that sort of thing that makes it sort of unacceptable? You know, I don't know.
So as maybe if we talk about music for a minute,
sure.
You correct me if I'm wrong. Classic rock. You enjoy classic rock. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do. I certainly grow up, you know, my dad, you know, certainly being a fan of the music of his day, growing up in the 50s and 60s, certainly the Beach Boys, Beatles, a lot of that music, certainly, which we featured quite heavily in our 60s pop culture class. But notice that even some of the sort of the major forms and styles go through quite a bit of development, even a rapid period of time, just like certainly the Beatles did. And within less than a decade, you can look at, you know, the early Beatles, much different from later Beatles and things like that. And sort of their ability to really be creative and take time away from the audience, which is always an interesting aspect of creativity and the relationship of the art and the artist and the audience, which is another interesting thing in itself. Like, should the artist give the audience what they want, or should the audience, you know, take what the artist gives them and let them grow and develop and change? Where the Beatles certainly demanded of their audience, we're going to grow and develop and change whether you like it or not. And so the audience developed with them, whereas the Beach Boys tried to develop and change and the audience wouldn't let them. And so it's like, no, you can't, we don't want you to change and be anything else. And so the Beach Boys have been stuck in this, you know, sort of classic surfing in cars, sort of, you know, shadow of their own greatest hits tribute band for the last, you know, 40, 50 years or so for the most part. Right. And so, music is that, and so, yeah, music is an interesting category because it's so immediate and so personal for people. Your music styles, your music tastes, it certainly is one to easily wrap up an identity. So when you're talking about should Christians engage in different music, when people hear no, you shouldn't, then they feel personally attacked much more with music probably than I think even like movie styles or sports that they like to watch or other sorts of pastimes or hobbies, because for the most part, music is very much much of pop music especially is more emotional than intellectual. There certainly are, you know, phases in, you know, 70s prog rock is more emotional intellectual probably than emotional, right? Telling grand sort of stories and concept albums that really require you to, if you want to understand this music, you're going to have to sit and listen. You can't dance to it. You got to sit and pay attention. Whether you have all of your, cognitive faculties operating at the time that you're listening to it or not. But so there's that aspect of what goes on with pop culture typically has also certainly played a role in, the Christian engagement with pop culture, right? Because of the, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Therefore, you can't engage with any of that because of its associations and things like that. So same thing with role-playing games in the modern sort of the next generation's sort of pop Christian or pop culture Christian battle from pop music to role-playing games. And now today, you can't really get away from it, where pop culture is certainly dominating so much of culture with, the fascination with superhero movies, things like that. And, just certainly through technology, the access to things so immediately all the time, it's a totally different argument and almost totally different battle today, right? Whereas, from the 50s, 60s through even the late 90s, early 2000s, your access to pop culture is still fairly limited. You know, you have to drive to the movie theater. You still have, maybe you have three, four, eventually, a dozen, two dozen channels to watch things on, maybe by the 90s, then, VHS tapes and DVDs and things like that. You can watch whatever you want, but it still requires you to be there, right? That's why sort of the pop culture of the 50s and 60s, it's a much different sort of world as a consumer of pop culture when you're going to say, all right, we're going to listen to this album. All right, in about 22 minutes, we have to stay here and then flip it over so we can listen to the rest of it. Versus today, you can take in your pocket thousands of movies, TV shows, songs with you wherever you want to go. And so the infrastructure of pop culture has changed quite a bit, which has made the ability or the need to engage in it or be aware of it much more important, but also much more difficult. And we are starting to see that even in the publishing fields now, just even the last few months with artificial intelligence and things like that, and so many small time publishing companies of, you know, science fiction, speculative fiction, things like that, are shutting down because they're now getting inundated with submissions of who knows who or what wrote this now. And so that's going to, you know, as the technology affects the genre, the field, you know, our ability as Christians, as, you know, thinking people, how do we respond to it, is always and has always been sort of behind the curve. And now it's, it feels like it's even more difficult, you know.
So as Christians are, whether you're thinking of a high school or a college student or somebody who's a parent and their kids are growing up and they're making these decisions about what should I engage with, right? Because that can be a difficult topic. Is this worth researching and looking in? And I think of, like, you know, for movies, it's like Plugged In and things like that. You can go on it. What's the sexual content? What's the violence? How much swearing? These types of things. Should I listen to this artist or this type of music or this style of music? It might have, there might be some swearing in it every once in a while. Maybe there's not, maybe there's lots. Maybe there's lots of sexual content. Maybe there's none. Maybe this artist, the music's okay, but he's got affiliations with other people or with drug culture or things like, there's all of these things going on. There's video games and violence and the time and addiction. And how do you, as you're thinking through all this, what is your advice is how to navigate all of these things?
Yeah, today, like I said, today it's a much different conversation than it was, you know, when we were growing up. And because of that access, because of the general standards in what is, you know, being made, for sure, has shifted quite drastically. We were looking at this in all sorts of ways, like in the publishing industry, the music industry, the movie industry, when even commercials today are so much more explicit, vulgar, things like that, that you are still sort of shocking, right? Like, why is this acceptable? Even, you know, especially when kids get ads everywhere they go on their tablets, devices, their phones. It's not just when we're sitting together as a family watching this hour of TV together after dinner or whatever. They can go take it with them, and they hear these unskippable ads on YouTube or other sort of streaming devices that they can't really escape from unless they, you know, physically turn away from it or turn off their phones, which is sort of an odd thing, right? So it's definitely a challenge, and it would be easy, certainly today, right, in the, you know, rapidly approaching the middle of the 21st century, to say, well, clearly just there's nothing good out there. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Standards have devolved so much that there's really nothing good. But, you know, that is, in a sense, I think, sort of the same attitude we saw a century ago as artistic, poetic fields, as you were saying, even like in the graphic arts with the modernist period in the teens and 20s, right after, right around World War I, things like that. There's a significant shift in the kinds of you know, approaches to visual arts, painting, sculpture, things like that. And so there's drastic breaks away from traditional, you know, safe to consume for everybody kind of poems that are being written, stories that are being written, paintings that are being painted. And then it seems like this nothing is good anymore. There's no moral value to it. So Christians should just not engage in it at all. And as we see, whenever Christians, I don't say neglect, but when Christians are not actively involved in elements of society, all elements of society, it never gets better. Mm. And so I don't know do Christians have an obligation to stay on top of pop culture? I think if we had for much of the 20th century, there's a good chance it wouldn't be as bad as it is right now. I mean, it's easy to say, you know, what if, you know, but I think when Christians are actively involved in, you know, their communities, you know, even, you know, mission trips, obviously, when Christians are actively involved from a moral perspective on their aspects of, you know, painting, literature, music, film that can be good, that aren't necessarily overtly Christian, when they were aware of that and sort of demonstrating that and talking about them openly with, you know, kids and others, with each other, and say, hey, I saw this really good movie. There's a lot of, you know, really good movies from the 50s and 60s that aren't necessarily Christian but they have very true stories and true characters and real emotions and real meaningful plot lines that are, you know, we would say, I would just say acceptable, that, but they're true, right? They're true stories. These paintings depict a fallen world, perhaps, but they're worth knowing about because that's what reality is like. That's what, you know, our goal is to interact, right? And that's, and so my sort of, you know, not necessarily overt, but sort of maybe a covert approach to why I think Christians should at least be aware of pop culture, know what's out there, sort of is Jesus's, you know, we need to be in the world, but not of the world. And just not being in the world at all, not being aware of what's going on is, like I said, it's not going to help anybody. And so we sort of wake up 20 years later, 40 years later and find, oh man, it's so much worse. So what should we do? Well, we'll keep, you know, running away from it, and it's not going to, you know, it hasn't worked yet. It won't, you know, continue to work. But then, it does become tricky. Like, how do we today then get back in there? You know, we tried, you know, making movies again, trying to make those, you know, popular, and those can do that. You know, we've seen that, you know, a year or two ago with a fairly traditionally moral kind of story like Top Gun 2, there's a definite need in the people out there for real stories that have a moral center to them that as Christians we can certainly use and engage with. More so, people don't really want the sort of peripheral kinds of, you know, appealing to their base and sin nature kinds of stories all the time. They may feel like it and they may want to sort of think that they want to, but there is certainly that need within human beings to sort of engage in what is true, right? Which, not to contradict the Bible, of course, I know no one seeks after a God and no one seeks after good for sure. But the response, I think, of, you know, Top Gun 2 a year or two ago should remind us that, you know, pop culture can be a very effective way for us to talk to people. Not necessarily, you know, flood the market with Christian songs and Christian movies and Christian books, things like that. But a willingness to engage in what the ideas that are out there and the what people want to talk about and bring them back to this eventually, right? Sort of, you know, as C.S. Lewis does in Mere Christianity, right? It's not chapter one, let me talk to you about Jesus and why you have to do this. It starts off with, you know, have you noticed that people so often think that I ought to do this or I ought not to do that. Why do you think that is? Like, and that's where he begins. That's where we can begin with pop culture. Like, what is it about this style? What is it about this thing that you listen to? And it may be a willingness on our part to listen to some of the music that's being made today and read the books that are being read. And, you know, and as parents or adults, that may be, we have to sort of be that vanguard for the kids and be aware of it. And before we just sort of let the kids do it, like, oh, it's from this publisher. When I was a kid 30 years ago, this publisher was great, so therefore, go for it, or things like that. That it's certainly not the case anymore. So I understand where that, especially today, but we've been saying that for 100 years. Like, today, things are bad. It's not, you know, they're not as good as they used to be. And so, there are certainly some obvious, you know, aspects, you know, from some titles and some, you know, publicity can show you, clearly this book, this movie is going to try to teach my child something that is contrary to the Bible. You know, so you don't necessarily, I mean, when it's so overt like that, I think it's fairly easy to, let's stay away from that, but let's do this other thing let's read this other thing that's popular, or even if it's a little older, you know, there's always, you know, certainly a realm to. And there's no harm in that either. So my point is always, you don't necessarily have to be up to date on your pop culture appetite and your pop culture knowledge, right? I'm usually about 4 or 5 decades behind myself. You know, I'm just, you know, growing up in the 60s. Now I'm trying to spend some more time trying to understand the 70s, right? So, but I can still talk to real human beings who are alive today because the ideas, the themes, the sounds, the stories, the images are still fairly similar, you know, and so there's definitely that need for introspection and reflection and why we, you know, engage in pop culture in general. And that can be really, for the most part, I think, for Christians today, don't feel that you have to be up to date on the chart topping artists, the number, the box office draws, things like that, the most popular recommended books. There's a good chance if streaming avenues and others are telling you this is the best, you can probably today just guess it's the best because the world says it's the best. And so let's look at other things that we can spend our time with that other people probably care about. And most people, you know, there's very few movies that will sustain their interest very long today. We saw a couple of more recent ones this past summer, right, that have gotten all the buzz and the hype. But even those movies that are popular recently, if you look at all-time charts, they're still not in the top 10 money-making movies of all time, no matter how much, like I said, buzz that they're getting about how great and how beloved these movies are. That could just be the hype train trying to, you know, drag your attention away from what people are really interested in and care about and things like that. So as Christians, we need to, I would say, be willing to be aware of what's going on and then find out, what's there. Not necessarily we have to be active consumers of everything that's popular today. We don't have to do that for sure, because so much of it is bad. But an unwillingness to be aware of it, an unwillingness, to be willing to engage and listen and observe, read for ourselves or watch for ourselves, that's, like I said, we're not necessarily culpable for sure, but, we haven't helped situations, for the last 3, 4, 5 generations by just, actively avoiding everything. That's not going to do anything good. So we don't have to go watch the latest, scary movie because everybody's going to see it. We don't have to go watch the latest TV show that's clearly promoting, values that are clearly biblically unsound. I mean, a lot of pop culture does our work for us and say, hey, we're bad. Like, okay, thank you. I'm your title, your ads, your posters promoting these things, your trailer for this movie. Thank you. I can tell my kids, we don't need to spend time with this, but that doesn't mean we should never watch movies, never listen to music, never read stories, things like that. And that's the thing. It's this mindfulness of being active in our world and aware of what's happening, which as Christians seems like that's distracting us from what we're supposed to be about, reading the Bible, praying, thinking about the future, but then we come up with phrases like, being so spiritually minded, we're no earthly good. We don't want to do that either, right? So there is, unfortunately, no great helpful formula. This is the right way to engage in popular culture. You spend X hours doing this and, X hours doing that, and now you are a full, rich Christian in the 21st century. But it is, for me, it's always been an attitude. Are you willing to listen to what people have to say? Here's why I think this is popular. Here's why it's good. All right. And the willingness of, back in the day, I had, Mr. Fleming and, Mr. Schneider in sort of personal evangelism saying, it's going to have to be like a give and take. If you want to tell them the good news about Jesus here in the late 20th century, and now into the 21st century, you may need to be willing to meet them where they are. You have to meet them where they are, right? And say, before we read this book together about Jesus, I will be glad to read this book that you care about that is, totally antagonistic to, the gospel and truth. And I will, as a, strong Christian, be willing to, do that because, there wasn't any really great people around when Jesus came to hang out with people anyway. We think of the disciples and all these people as really great, but at the time when Jesus met them, they didn't really believe in him. Nobody did, right? And he sort of engaged all the time in a world that was beneath him, and he did it out of love. And we should do that as well. That doesn't mean we have to become addicted to bad things just to know what it's like. We don't have to watch this X-rated thing or watch this other thing just because it seems popular. But we have to be aware of what our world is doing, and then that will enable us to meaningfully engage it instead of just saying, hey, you're wrong, you're going to hell, here's what Jesus says. It has always been about relationships, and it's always been about leading people humbly, as Peter says, right? We tend to always have this ready defense for the hope that is within you. And we stop there, right? Like, yes, so I got it. I've got my facts. I've got my apologetics. I've got this. I'm ready to do battle with the world. But Peter says, with humility and respect. Oh, we sometimes forget that part, you know? And so that is, has been, I think, my emphasis on pop culture. Let's be aware of it. It's not going to hurt us. I mean, it kind of can, maybe, but that willingness to be aware of what's there. And I tend to say, like I was joking about it a moment ago, but I said, feel free to start, you know, with two generations ago, you know, familiarize yourself with, especially by now, you know, I know do the 60s pop culture, maybe someday a 70s pop culture. You know, I don't think we could ever really do a, you know, 2000, at least not for a while, 2000s, 2010 pop culture. You know, it's too close. It's too personal. We don't really even know yet what really was important, what really stuck with people. But we can now say from, I think, even though, you know, some of us were like, you know, my dad and others were still there and still have personal experiences. We can learn from them for sure while we have that opportunity. But from the safe distance, I think I can still say, I wasn't there at the 60s at the time, but here's what time and culture have shown were important. And here's why they were important. Here's what was significant about this music style, about this development in literature and this role of art. And here's how we can, with our transcendent absolute values that never change, we have that freedom and the ability to comment on what is good. And we can still use that. You can say, well, why can't we use that for ourselves today? We can for sure. Right. If your kid wants to go to see this R-rated movie because all the kids are doing it and it seems like this is this, you know, really important social event. We do have that ability to, without a whole lot of personal experience, and it's like, well, here's what I know to be true. And if this movie is this, if it serves this purpose, then here's why maybe we shouldn't. But like you said, there are certainly one of the other benefits of this explosion of access to information has been the explosion of access to commentary and awareness. And as you said, some sites that will say, hey, here's what, you know, 14 other parents like you have said, and here it's gets 2 out of 5 stars in this area and 3 out of 5 stars in this area. Like, I can use that as a guide. So it takes very little. So the need to be aware of what's going on there is still pressing, but the resources that we have are much more than we used to, right? So that is also helpful.
I think this has been a helpful conversation overall. I think we'll probably wrap up there. Just, we could talk about this for a long time. I'm every sentence you're saying, I'm being flooded with more questions than I could ask, but we'd be going all afternoon and sure, we both have things to do. So thank you very much for coming on. This has been really good.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Concerning Him, an Emmaus podcast. Ministries like Concerning Him are possible because of the generous contributions from our partners around the world. For more information about partnering with us, please visit emmaus.edu/partner.